virus systems, I'll be wrecking. Command line's all I need for now, cause I'm pure decay. This is Pure Decking, show number 434 for Thursday, April the 29th. I forgot to find a funny year. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and reminding you that bourbon is good cough medicine. Joining me tonight is Madman.
Oh crap, the Zerg discovered Ultralisks.
That's not the... Fair enough. Fair enough. Also here, we have RU.
A big social distance high five to everybody. How are you?
Let me just cough on my hand before the high five there.
That's chemical warfare, dude. Don't. Geneva Convention prevents you coughing.
I didn't sign no Geneva Convention. We signed no convention. If I get a little scatterbrained, I actually do have like a head cold or something going on, or the coof, maybe. I'd probably not. So probably not going to be that long of a show. So if you guys hear horrible coughing in the background, just means I forgot to mute. So let's just get started here with something. I always like seeing this. So one of the best measures of a company that claims to actually handle your user data correctly is when they get subpoenaed and they answer the subpoena with, "We have no user data." So Signal has an article here on their blog, you know, that they got a grand jury subpoena for Signal user data from the Central District of California. And, you know, they've written it in kind of first person view here, but, so when Signal received the subpoena from the United States Attorney Office in the Central District of California, it felt like 2016 all over again. Nostalgia can be great, just like last time we got in touch with ASLU to work with them on our response. Because everything in Signal is end-to-end encrypted by default, the broad set of personal information that is typically easy to retrieve in other apps simply does not exist on Signal servers. The subpoena requires a wide variety of information that fell into the non-existent category, including addresses of users, their correspondence, the name associated with each account. Just like last time, we couldn't provide any of that. Excuse me. It's impossible to turn over data that we never had access to in the first place. Signal doesn't have access to your messages, your chat lists, groups, contacts, stickers, profile name, or avatar, or even the gifts you search for. As a result, the response to the subpoena will look familiar. It's the same set of account and user information they provided in 2016, Unix timestamps for when each account was created, and the date that each account last connected to the Signal service. That's it. And they have the subpoena documents and their response posted right there down below. That, you know, here's the requested information that we have. This is all we have. That, and this is like one of the reasons why I liked private internet access and TrueCrypt back in the day, is when you see law enforcement unable to force these companies to turn over information, that means they really don't have it. Because usually what's going to happen is if they actually have the data and they tell the government that they don't, their own internal lawyers will lose their fucking minds, because if you get caught doing that, that's the end of not only your company, but most of your employees are going to jail.
Yeah, at least your upper management.
Yeah, so they don't normally play this game if they really don't have the data. So that, in my mind, tells me Signal's probably a service worth using.
Yeah.
I always like seeing this when a privacy company gets a subpoena and literally answers with, "We're a privacy company. We don't have that data. We cannot give it to you." Because what was the email service? LavaMail. You know, where they requested the keys from LavaMail. And LavaMail said, "If you provide this, we'll have to shut down because you are requesting everything we have as far as our encryption goes. But it's still not going to get you what you want. But at that point, the entire privacy of our entire system would be compromised. We'll have to shut it down." And the government said, "We don't care. Give it to us." So he complied with the subpoena and then shut his service down because he really couldn't answer what they wanted, and he still didn't have what they wanted, which was the actual, you know, keys to the encrypted email, which he never had. So when you see that, that's a really good indication that they're doing the technology correctly, because as I often rant about, it's not like they're just saying we can't give you access. If they've done encryption properly, if they've done end-to-end security properly, and they're doing proper key management, there is no back door. There is no giving the government the information or just only having a back door for the good guys. It doesn't happen. It doesn't exist. The only way to do that is to store extra keys on some kind of a company accessible server and hope that everyone involved plays by the rules. And we know that that doesn't happen. So this is the correct response if you're actually running an encrypted messaging platform.
Is that what Signal does, messaging?
Yeah, they're a privacy focused instant messenger. It's like WhatsApp, but it wasn't Signal. I think, was it Telegram? There was another one that I played with because some of you guys at work were interested in it, and I wanted to test it out, and we used it for a little bit. It's kind of cool because it wouldn't it would lock out a bunch of functions on your phone. So if you tried to like take screenshots of messages, because it was one of those ones where your messages would disappear after time. I think it might have been Telegram. There were ways around it, but it essentially involved pointing a camera at your phone screen while you had the message on the screen if you wanted to archive anything on it, or using a very hacked phone. But, yeah, this is cool. So, you know, I haven't actually played with Signal much. I haven't, you know, set up an account on it or anything. I've looked at it before. But like I said, if they're telling the government, we really can't answer your subpoena, sorry. In my mind, that's a pretty good indicator that they're doing it correctly.
Yeah.
Can't really get a better indicator than that. Because unless they're signing something under oath, companies are allowed to lie to you.
Well, a lot of these companies do. So you'll see VPN providers and stuff like that quietly get subpoenaed in the background. And they'll usually ask for their response to be sealed because it doesn't match their marketing. But, you know, when they get these responses and they really have to say, sorry, guys, we weren't lying with our advertising. I have no back doors to give you. Well, you know, what else is there?
Well, they'll just have to try harder to shut it down now. Because that's what they're trying to do.
That or get Facebook to buy them and put back doors in.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that why Microsoft bought Skype?
That's, yeah.
I can't disprove that.
I'm
fairly certain that's not their listed reason. Oh, that's kind of terrible.
I mean, Facebook tends to be buying up any other competing social network or messaging app, and you know, now they're going after Apple because Apple's trying to, you know, limit. I've got that article because they just pushed that update. But before that, I've got another Signal story to get at. But move on. You guys have anything else on that?
I just have no need for an app like Signal. There's no one saying anything I want to hear, if you know what I mean.
You don't really do texting? Because that's pretty much what it is.
I don't. You know?
It's private texting.
It's a phone app or something, isn't it?
It's a phone app, yeah. I think you can run it on a desktop, but I mean, I already set up our own back channel, and that's what I use for most of... It's like we built our own already, and then we kept it small enough to not have a problem, but that's a different argument. So the next article I have here, though, is from Gizmodo, but... Psychros sent me this, actually, and there's another article that follows up on this, but I cut it, which is even funnier, that Signal CEO just hacked the cop's favorite cracking tool and became a legend. So Israeli digital intelligence firm Cellbrite Software sells software designed to unlock phones and extract their data. As a result, its products are a favorite of law enforcement agencies across the U.S., and police frequently use them to gather evidence from seized devices. In the past, the company has received criticism for its willingness to sell to pretty much any government, including repressive regimes around the world. However, despite its mission to compromise phone security everywhere, Cellbrite would appear to have little interest in securing its own software, if you believe the CEO of Signal. In a blog post published Wednesday, Moxie Marlinspike claimed that Cellbrite software had atrocious security that could easily be manipulated in a number of pretty astounding ways. We were surprised to find that very little care seems to have been given to Cellbrite's own software security. Industry standard exploit mitigation defenses are missing, and many opportunities for exploitation are present. Marlinspike writes, until Cellbrite is able to accurately repair all vulnerabilities in the software with high confidence, the only remedy a Cellbrite user has is to not scan devices. And so he put together proof of concept code, deployed it to a phone, and made Cellbrite pop up a message. I'm going to read it verbatim. Mess with the best, die like the rest, hack the planet.
Fuck yes. I support this message.
Now, the best part about it is Cellbrite went in and disabled in their software. They just disabled scanning most of Apple devices right now because that's how he did it. It was an iPhone.
Nice.
And there's a whole article on that, but basically Cellbrite wasn't exactly sure what to do, so they just disabled scanning on Apple devices till they can get it figured out, which is even funnier.
That's brilliant. I'd love the day of the hacker troll to come back. You know what I mean? No malicious, just enough to leave a message, let you know you got pwned, well, and walk away, you know?
Yeah, now it's all hacktivism and...
Yeah, no, I miss the glory days of hacker trolls. They're changing someone's front page image or just enough that no one notices until they see the big giant dick flashing.
Taking over a high school webpage and forcing it to redirect to random porn sites.
Well, that's what I mean, you know, like, you know, mylazysundays.com.
Yeah, some of that's still out there, but, you know, I mean, you all have heard me make the joke that I don't hack into anything unless I'm getting paid these days.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, the idea of just breaking into something to break into it these days, I mean, you know, back in the 70s and 80s, that was how you learned about a system, was by breaking into it. In the 90s, that's how you got a job. And then after that, that's how you went to jail. So,
yeah,
it's unfortunate that kind of stuff is going away. But the funniest thing to me is that instead of, like, what Cellbrite should have done is they should have called Signal and be like, okay, we're going to pay you $100 million or, you know, whatever, pay a bug bounty, basically. And it's like, okay, tell us how you did this.
Yeah,
just pay them. It's a company. Buy consulting services from them. What are you doing? You know, this whole shutting down the software and releasing statements about how, I didn't finish the article, but yeah, they put out a statement like, our software is used to save lives, and this exploit is people, you know, trying to interfere with that mission and help terrorism and all that. You know, it's like, dude, no, he's not. He's just proving that you people are idiots.
Yeah.
I haven't seen if Cellbrite is suing them yet, her rats, but yeah, they did disable some things and, you know, put out this statement about how we're the better people and, you know, they shouldn't be interfering with us like this. And it's like, that's not the game. That the old school hacker ethic was to do it to prove that they were smarter than you, and he succeeded.
Exactly. It was for credit, man. Bragging rights. Look what I fucking did.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And, you know, it's like, okay, you should then pay him for the solution and go fix your software, as opposed to putting out these whiny statements and then...
How dare you? I want to see more of it. Anyway, Morps is dying there in the background, probably, because I haven't heard him for a little bit, so he's probably coughing up a lung to feed to his cat later on, because he's cheaping out on the tin tuna.
No,
the solution was one of the worst ones you can come up with. let's ban the most popular mobile device in our market.
Well, they didn't ban it. They just shut it down.
What? It's interesting because, and I've mentioned this before, Apple is making some interesting moves as far as privacy goes on the iOS platforms. Like, they still have the most walled-off and controlled garden. But, you know, yeah, as far as, like, protecting their end users, they're probably doing the best job right now.
Well, I don't know if they're protecting their end users so much as their own image.
And column A, column
that's
B.
Yeah. What a company is its image.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think, if it could fuck its users over and get away with it and still maintain that Apple image, I think they would.
Well, but their business isn't based around data like Facebook and Google is. Their business, I mean, they do some of the data
they're
stuff.
They're a hardware fashion design unit.
That is a fantastic way to put it.
That's the only thing I look at. That's designer hardware. That's all it is.
Well, I mean, hell, they keep it up. I'll probably switch back to an iPhone at some point.
I get why you do it. You do it for functionality. Most people doing it, you know, because it's a fashion statement. You're about the functionality.
Well,
most
I'm looking
look
at what
Apple
they're doing versus
fashion.
What Android is doing and going, well, they're actually, you know, giving me a checkbox that I don't think Android, I mean, they have the checkboxes, but I don't know how often it's actually respected. So, okay, let me put it this way. The reason I'm thinking about this is because Facebook takes out full-page ads attacking Apple for the latest round of updates to iOS, whereas my last fucking Android phone came with Facebook pre-installed, and when I use Package Disabler to disable Facebook, some other services on the phone flip the fuck out.
Yeah, it's one giant fucking tentacle, isn't it? It's wrapped around everything.
Well, I mean, it broke part of Samsung Knox. And that's the thing that pisses me off, because I need Samsung Knox for my work stuff. You know, because that's the security mechanism provided on these phones. And so that's what the MDM solutions hook into. And so somehow disabling Facebook broke Samsung Knox. How does that work?
That works that Facebook has way too much integration into that phone.
Yeah.
Pretty much. So instead, I just made sure it's not signed into anything. Not that that matters, because I'm sure Facebook has a way of associating the data they're getting. But, yeah.
One problem Google's going to have when it comes to trust is they didn't start out as a hardware company. They started out as selling your data. So am I going to trust that business model changes? Apple did start out as, let's sell you some good hardware. Whether how good they stayed with that is, you know, questionable, but they were an Apple. They were a hardware company.
Well, they still largely are. They still want to sell you, like we talked about, they still want to sell you a tablet, a phone, and a laptop. And almost everything else they're doing is supporting that idea of you buying into their ecosystem.
So they have a reason to keep you either securing your information or at least making it very hard for you to think they're not, because they're still going to make money off your information if they can. They're a company, but their primary method of making money is buy our product. We'll take care of you.
And then use our ecosystem. Yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this article I have here from Mac Rumors. Apple says it will ban and reject apps on the App Store that attempt to offer users monetary incentives to enable tracking through app tracking transparency, one of the many measures the company is taking to ensure developers follow through in the new framework. Yesterday, Cupertino's tech giant released iOS and iPadOS 14.5 with several headlining features, including the transparency framework. ATT is a new framework on iOS and iPad devices that requires apps to ask for user permission before tracking them across other apps and websites. It's received significant criticism from companies such as Facebook, which deems it a threat to its business. With the new framework, all apps on the App Store must present users with a pop-up that asks them whether they wish to be tracked or not. Users are also shown ask app not to track and allow in the pop-up. following AT&T or ATT's release, that's going to be a problem that they've named their framework the same thing as a large telecommunications company. Apple also updated its human interface guides with a new section titled Accessing User Data. In this section, offering a mix of new and previously known information, Apple outlines the design policies that all apps must follow when they attempt to ask for user for the permission to access personal data, device capabilities such as microphone and camera, and consent to track them across apps and websites. It goes on, but pretty much if the app is trying to say that it won't work, if you say no to the, I think they can't stop these app makers from saying, well, we're just not going to work if you don't turn it on. But if they're trying to give you any kind of incentive, they just won't allow it in the App Store. Which, you know, if you want to enforce this framework, that's the way to do it. If you're going to have a walled garden, enforce the rules. So, but, I had another article on this, but I closed it out because I didn't think it was all that interesting. That, but it did talk about they had done some testing. I think it was Facebook had done some independent testing and found that only like a quarter of their users would let them track across the phone when this was turned on. Most people said ask not to track just by default. So Facebook is really shitting their pants over this. And I hope that this will put pressure on Google to do the same thing on their phones. I don't think it will because Google's business is too close to Facebook's of the data collection. But I like the concept.
And Apple's large enough that this will make a difference. They're probably going to be the... More people are going to probably access the internet on an Apple device than any other individual device.
I know several people who are not computer people. They have an iPad or they have a phone or both, and that's what they do 90% of their stuff on. Hell,
I know people that only access the internet on their phone.
My parents, 90% of what they do is on iPads. They both have computers, but they only use those for very specific things. So
yeah, they have enough market share to make privacy a thing. That's, I'm going to say kudos to Apple. They're actually not being dicks when it comes to at least this one thing.
I mean,
still not going to buy their shit because they're overpriced and I just don't do shit on my phone to be tracked. So I'm not worried about it.
Well, but yeah, enough.
If you're doing anything on your phone, it sounds like an iPhone is the one to get.
At least at the moment. Now, I know that there's the SKUs of Android. There's the various privacy-focused Android builds where they've stripped all the Google services out of them. And, you know, you can go flash certain models of phones with those, like Lineage OS and things like that, I think is what they're called, is one of them. So it's not that you can't build a privacy-focused device, but just having one that's kind of set up out of the box for that, that's appealing.
Even the ones that are set up out of the box, you don't have to worry about what programs are you downloading, and at least Apple is forcing the programs to be honest with you.
Well, they're trying to. I mean,
yeah.
We've talked about stories in the past where people have managed to slip stuff past Apple in their app review process. So we'll see how well that actually ends up getting enforced. I think you will see apps that'll just, if you disable the tracking, we'll just say, since you don't allow the tracking, we can't, you know, you just can't use this app. Or they'll say, because I have noticed a trend since both Android and Google now allow subscriptions for apps, every fucking app wants a $20 a year, you know, more than that subscription app, you know, now. And I've had to prune a few things off of most of my devices because it's like, it used to just be free or have an ad at the bottom. Now it's like, you know, they want $5 a month to keep using something. And I'm like, fuck yeah, I'm not paying that. So I haven't had one that I like where I out bought something and now it's a subscription, but apparently that's happened to some people too.
Oh, I would flip my fucking shit and go crazy on somebody. And I can see going free to subscription, fine. I wasn't paying for it and you deserve to make money off of your work. But if we had an agreement, I give you money, you give me this app, and now you're changing that? No, you're a lying sack of shit, and you can go die in a fire. That overkilling that, because that's, I think that's a legitimate way to feel.
I think it's fair because they're basically saying, oh, you paid for it, but yeah, fuck you. So what?
Yeah, we had a deal. You give me this software, I give you my money. I gave you my money, and now you're going back on this shit. No, fuck you.
Yeah, I haven't had one that I've bought do that, but I don't buy that many apps on these things. I have a tendency when I need the thing to do something to... Well, I've had Pythonista installed on my iPad for a long time, so half the time I just write what I need when I need something on there. I'm not going to claim to be that good at it, but it works well enough, like, you know, for quickie stuff. So, and that one hasn't gone subscription on me, at least not that I've noticed.
Yeah, most of my apps are news or video streaming. And if the BBC decides to start charging, I'll either get my news from somewhere else or pay them. I can understand.
Don't pay a madman.
Yeah, Mike, like I said,
it's not worth reading as it is.
So, anyways, anything else on that? We're blazing through it tonight. That's all right. It's going to be a short show. And we knew that going in just because I feel like trash. Let's see. Next one up is some dark reading. FBI works with Have I Been Pwned to notify Emotep.
We've used that before.
Oh, yeah. I just think it's funny that, you know, law enforcement doesn't have anything better. They're going to Have I Been Pwned just like we are. I mean, it doesn't surprise me. I just think it's kind of funny. Officials shared 4.3 million email addresses with the Have I Been Pwned website to help inform companies and individuals if Emotep compromised their accounts. The FBI is working with data breach notification service Have I Been Pwned to help notify people and businesses if their accounts were affected by the Emotep botnet, this site reports. Earlier this year, law enforcement officials around the world coordinated with an operation to seize control of the Emotep infrastructure. Following the takedown, the FBI contracted Have I Been Owned, contacted Have I Been Pwned to see whether the service might be an effective means of alerting affected individuals and companies, going to a blog post by the creator, Troy Hunt. As part of his collab, the FBI shared more than 4.3 million email addresses spanning a large range of countries and domains, which came from two sources of data the FBI obtained during the takedown. These include email credentials that Emotep stores for sending spam via email service providers and web credentials from browsers that have been stored to aggregate logins. Given that the remediation is similar, both have been categorized as a single breach. The incident has been flagged as sensitive, meaning it cannot be publicly searched. People either need to verify their own address through notification service or do a domain search to see if they're affected. Those who have been affected are advised to change their email account password, as well as passwords and security questions for accounts stored in their inbox and browser. Hunt recommends keeping security software up to date. Hunt points out this isn't the first time law enforcement has used Have I Been Pwned. Back in 2018, Cybercrime Bureau of the Estonian Central Criminal Police used the service to alert people affected by several different breaches. So, interesting.
Yeah, I think it's a good use of resources. If there's a private company already doing it, why spend taxpayers' dollars on it? So yeah, outsource. Good public-private partnership.
Yeah, I just thought it was a cool one to add to the list.
And we're more cutting edge than I thought. Using the same tools as the FBI.
No, they're catching up. Okay. Yeah, it is going to be a short show tonight. That's all right. Next article up is from Ars Technica. And this is an interesting one. Ransomware operators have delivered a stunning ultimatum to Washington, D.C.'s Metropolitan Police Department. Pay them $50 million or they'll leak the identities of confidential informants to street gangs.
Oh, fucking shit. Secure your network? They're getting into confidential informants?
Babuk, as the group calls itself, said on Monday that it had obtained 250 gigabytes of sensitive data after hacking the MPD network. The group's site on the dark web has posted dozens of images of what appears to be sensitive MPD documents. One screenshot shows a Windows directory titled Disciplinary Files. Each of the 28 files listed shows a name. And then they've got a screenshot here showing names that all belong to MPD officers. They've blacked out the screenshots, but they're telling you what they blacked out. Other images appear to show persons of interest names and photos, a screenshot of a folder named Gang Database, chief's reports, lists of arrests, and a document listing the names and addresses of a confidential informant. Quote, we advise you to contact us as soon as possible to prevent leakage, unquote, a post on the site says. If no response is received in 3 days, we'll start to contact gangs in order to drain the informants. I mean, this is bad. If it's real. It looks real.
Do it. Do it. I want them to do it.
Oh, no, dude. These are people trying to clean up their community. Okay, I'm
it's
giving
gotta
them
get
more
a hell
credit
of a lot
than they want.
Madman, it has to get worse before it gets better. Do it.
Yeah, but I don't want people that are cooperating with the cops to get rid of
violence
in cities to get hurt.
I don't either, but if it has to happen, you got to break some eggs, man.
We're not either making omelets or genocides here.
In an email, MPD Public Information Officer Hugh Caro wrote, we are aware of unauthorized access on our server. While we determine the full impact and continue to review the activity, we have engaged the FBI to fully investigate the matter. Carew didn't answer questions seeking additional details about the breach. In a videotape message published on Tuesday night, Metropolitan Police Chief Robert J. Conti III said that with the assistance of local and federal partners, MPD has identified and blocked the mechanism that allowed the intrusion. He provided no new details about the breach or the ongoing investigation into it. Quote, our partners are fully engaged in assessing the scope and impact, he said. In the course of the review, if it is discovered that personal information of our members or others was compromised, we will follow up with that information, unquote. The chief went on to encourage people to maintain good cyber hygiene.
They need to, one, start encrypting the files that they keep their confidential informants information in, and two, they need to get their confidential informants into witness protection. You can't leave these people out to dry, or you're just not going to have anyone come forward to help you anymore.
The incident underscores the growing brazenness of ransomware operators. Once content with merely locking up victims' data and demanding a ransom in exchange for the keys, attackers eventually introduced a dual revenue model that charged for the key but also promised to publish severe or sensitive documents online unless the ransom was paid. In recent weeks, at least one gang has started contacting customers and suppliers of victims to warn them that their data might be spilled if the victims don't pay up. Threatening to identify confidential informants to organized criminal gangs, as Babuk appears to be doing now, hits a new low, said Brett Carlo, a threat analyst who follows ransomware security firm MSoft. That's as bad as it gets, he told Ars. Can you imagine the potential for lawsuits if an informant would be harmed as a direct result of a breach? Babuk is a relatively new ransomware enterprise that appeared in January. Not much is known about the group other than it has Russian-speaking team members, and MSoft researchers found a severe bug in the group's decryptor software that caused data loss. The group's dark website claims to have breached almost a dozen other companies. Last week, a U.S. Justice Department memo showed the agency converting a new task force to respond to the recent surge in ransomware attacks, particularly on hospitals and other critical U.S. organizations. Acting Deputy Attorney General John Carlin will lead the task force, which is made up of agents and prosecutors from the FBI and Justice Department. Leak might pose a threat not just to confidential informants, but also ongoing investigations. Federal prosecutors last year dropped narcotics charges against six suspects after crucial evidence was destroyed in a ransomware infection. So, I mean, this is pretty bad. And what's interesting, though, is these extortion models that they're using, these line up perfectly with the old school kidnapping schemes you used to see. Sorry about that. The old school kidnapping schemes you used to see various parts of the Middle East, Northern Africa, Eastern Europe, where they would just kidnap people, demand ransom, and then eventually give them back. But, you know, it was just constantly whatever they could do to get ransom out of people. And now they're just trying to find ways to apply that to a larger audience. And I think, I mean, it's bad enough if you're a cop right now, given the political climate. But now you got this shit going on, too. I mean, yeah.
If you can't be trusted, if confidential informants can't trust the cops to at least try to keep them safe, you're not going to have people coming out to speak against a lot of these gang members, because several of these are quite violent. You don't want to get on the bad side of MS-13. They send guys with machetes to your house.
It's just an idea, madman. I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, God.
Okay, the happy Mexicans. I know that's kind of racist because I think they're Peruvian, but still. Well, no, it's not racist. Mexican isn't a race.
It's a nationality.
Whatever, I want a burrito.
I kind of do now, too.
I think MS-13 mainly comes out of Honduras.
Yeah, one of those.
But they're everywhere, countries. Man. They're global now, so... I don't know, man. It's... Teach your people not to click on stupid shit.
Well, I wonder if that's how they got in. It was just a bad
email.
Yeah, I
bet it, man. I bet it was a shit email. But it's their fault for not having that stuff encrypted.
Well, you'd think they'd have some kind of an air gap system. I mean, I realize it's a pain in the ass to set up and deal with, but...
But we're the police. You can't do that to us. We're the police. That's what they were thinking with their security.
Well, that very well might be the case.
I mean, that's what they were thinking when a lot of police stations were getting sent on fire. You can't do this. We're the police. They're starting to figure out that police is just a word. They don't care.
Yeah, they don't. That's the problem. I mean,
doing it right might cost money, but you have to do it right, or it's going to cost you more money.
Madman, you won't find an argument from me.
Sorry, Morris.
That doing it right.
Well, the problem is nobody wants to adapt the kind of systems that you truly need if you want to keep data secure.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it's expensive. It is expensive, and it's hard to manage and maintain.
But they didn't even need to encrypt that data if they had it air-gapped. You know, why is your informant network on the network? You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, I understand why it's not air-gapped, because that makes it an absolute pain in the ass to use, because that means you actually have to get up, go into another room, and use, you know, certain machines that are allowed to touch this data.
Yeah,
now,
that's... Security is a pain in the ass.
Yes, it is.
You don't ask a bank manager, you know, about unlocking vaults and shit. It takes a long time if it's not done on a computer timer.
Well, they're usually done on computer timers.
I know they are, but back in the day when you didn't have all that stuff, it would have been an absolute pain in the ass. It's meant to be hard.
Well, the way to properly do this kind of thing is you say, okay, this kind of data is considered, you know, above confidential, right? Whatever you'd want to, you know, pick a word, you know, yeah. Highly classified, whatever, because you're dealing with ongoing investigations, informants, you know, things that where if a gang gets this guy's name, they're going to get chopped up and, you know, mailed to their family over the course of a week in various pieces. So the way you do that is you do proper network segmentation, you build what's called a jump host, and that's where you have a remote machine that machine is allowed to talk to the database and handle the encryption keys and things like that. And if you want to connect to that machine, you have to go through the hoops. Now, that usually means something along the lines of like, well, the one I'm familiar with is CyberArk, where you can set up an authentication system where you authenticate to the jump host and then that authenticates you to your client. And the reason you do things like that is that CyberArk host can be hardened. It can be locked the fuck down because somebody's not living on it and doing their email and web browsing and notes and, you know, taking it home and letting their kids play on it and shit like that, like you normally see people have with their normal end-user client laptops. So the idea is to try to make it to where I have to trust my client, my end-users, as little as possible to get to the very important data. That way, if somebody does pick up ransomware, does pick up malware, gets their machine pwned, the amount of damage they can do is limited. They can still do damage with a system like that, but what you're really wanting to have happen is to put enough, you know, trip lines in place that you have a shot at catching that machine is compromised before they get very far. And it's hard, it's expensive, and you need people to monitor it. And given how hard and how expensive it is, and the fact that they're trying to defund most of the police right now, I doubt it's going to get fixed. So I don't know what the answer to that one is, because I mean, if you can't trust the cops with your data, I mean, you know, if you're going to the cops for help and they're getting pwned just like everybody else, what do you do?
You have fewer people going to help the cops.
Well, there's that. Rat says paper documents only for information. Well,
there you go.
We tried to talk about that I could see some people going full Luddite and saying, you're not allowed to put this stuff stored electronically. It's too sensitive. It has to be paper only. I could see that. I mean, because that means if somebody's going to steal it, they actually have to, you know, sneak a camera into whatever controlled room and you know, old school 1950s spy shit, right? But of course, cameras are tiny these days, so it might not be that hard. But
yeah, but it's going to get rid of, I think, most of the actors getting into information theft these days. How many people are actually breaking into a facility, and how much of it is just done remotely?
You know, when I was taking my classes and learning security, they put a good amount of time into people doing physical attacks on your premises, on your buildings. And you just don't see it. You really don't. I don't catch people out there dumpster diving at night. I mean, yeah, dumpster diving's a thing, but not for most businesses. They all have shred boxes that are locked. So it's not like you're losing data and manuals and shit. You don't see people, you know, breaking into buildings Mission Impossible style. You do occasionally catch people sitting in a parking lot with a cantenna trying to get on your Wi-Fi. But if your network's set up right, who cares? They get into the Wi-Fi, so what? All they can connect to is exactly your VPN endpoint. And that doesn't do them any good. They still need a password. So there are other attacks. One of the really fun ones is to set up a fake access point. So you go up there with the cantenna, figure out what their access points are named, then go figure out where most of those employees go eat lunch, set up a fake access point, and just collect all the authentication attempts.
Nice.
from people's phones and tablets and laptops and shit. That's a way of getting credentials, but excuse me. I don't know if I'm losing my voice or not. Last story for tonight. Let's finish up here before I need more cough medicine here shortly. And by cough medicine, I mean bourbon. Last story is from PCGamer.com. Oculus will sell you a Quest 2 headset that doesn't need Facebook for an extra $500.
Damn. Oh, suck my dick.
So, I don't need to read this article because they're talking about how great the Quest 2 is and the fact that they sell it for $300, and that's why it's one of the most popular VR headsets right now. But they apparently make, you know, Oculus is planning on making a business version that does not have to be tied back to Facebook servers, and they want to, you know, they want to charge $800 for each headset. And they want a $200 a year service fee.
The fuck?
How long do you think before that firmware's cracked and it's just on all the Oculus?
Yeah.
Actually, pretty sure it already is. Yeah, those are the business ones, rats. That's where it's coming from, is they're trying to sell to companies that they think are going to use them for something that's not games. That's why they're putting a yearly service contract on there. For anybody who's worked with in business software contracts, this idea of paying yearly a service fee to keep using the software, that's not unusual in you know, business software contracts. So this is where you're going to sell. That price is like a retail price, or that's a list price. No company is actually going to pay that for those. Because the idea isn't that I'm going to buy one or two of these headsets from Oculus, from Facebook. If I'm building a company that uses these things, I'm probably buying them in the hundreds, right?
I want to build a 3D virtual arcade, and I just need 1,000 Oculus rips.
Right, so you're not going to pay the $800 a headset. You're going to do a contract, and you're probably going to end up paying, you know, probably half that, but it's because you're going to order them in lots of 1,000, right? And you're going to be running a lot of your own software, so you're not going to want to go through the Facebook system because you're going to be using it for whatever you're doing with it. You know, maybe you've got some kind of cool data visualization and you're using it, or maybe you're using it for some kind of video editing, or you're employing a team of artists to escape 3D, you know, 3D rooms and landscapes for video game development or movies and things like that. Or maybe you're doing virtual workspaces with them. You know, I've still got my first edition Quest, and there's several apps that try to create these virtual workspaces, and they're not terrible. You know, it's not great, but, you know, they're not terrible. And you know, there's several apps that try to be like VR chat, or, you know, they try to do the whole virtual meeting space thing. I did a couple of VR conferences last year, security conferences, that were held in alt space. And you did kind of get that feeling of being at a conference when you're really just sitting on your couch. It wasn't bad. It wasn't great, but I mean, it wasn't bad. So I could see companies buying these for some kind of, you know, VR, you know, some kind of VR workspace initiative or things like that. Or Psychros has in there things like VR surgery. So I could actually, yeah, I could see things like that. Or, you know, maybe you got drone pilots and they're using them or something. I don't know. I'm sure there's 100 other things you could do with these things outside of just playing games. I mean, everybody enjoys a bit of Beat Saber now and again. But yeah, they're stacking that extra $500 on the price tag. And the article is taking, you know, the guy writing the article is taking the viewpoint, well, that must be how much Facebook values the data they're going to get off of it. Is at $500 a headset, which, again, I think that number's inflated because they don't actually expect to get that price for these headsets, because they're expecting to sell them at lots of 1,000 to a business or a company, or Air Force drones with business Quest 2 Xbox. I could see the Air Force buying a couple of crates of these things to use for. Or DARPA or somebody like that using it for development. I could totally see that. So
here's how you fly the Predator with an Oculus Rift.
Well, you know, you think about it. It's a decent display. It's got an onboard processor. It's built around Android, so developing for it's a fairly known quantity. Oculus's libraries are actually pretty good for development. I was looking into it back when I first got the Quest. Never did anything with it, but I was at least reading up on it. You know, they cover a lot of space. There's some well-known engines that work in it. Unity's usually a big one. Unreal's another one that supports the VR stuff. It would be very easy to see in-house software development coming up with applications for these to pipe in a video feed from a 360-degree camera on a drone, like Psychros or Rats is talking about. In the IRC, I could see doing data visualization, you know, in my case, for network security. I could totally see piping a bunch of feeds from your SIM and your Splunk instances and your alerts, piping all that in, having graphics and doing, you know, Minority Report style interfaces. The only problem with that is your arms are going to get tired for data manipulation. So, I mean,
all these jack dudes working security in the year 2030.
Well, that was the problem Nintendo had with all their motion controls is, yeah, sure, yeah, you can swing the controller around, but after a while, your arms get tired. And, you know, if I'm wanting to sit back and play a game, half the time it's because I want to sit on my ass and just push buttons. I don't want to be, you know, jumping around the room like mad, although occasionally it is fun.
Way to fix our sedentary lifestyles.
Rats, Jedi Council-style VR meetings will be a big thing. You're convinced. Okay, yes, there are people selling that right now on the Quest. They are selling that virtual meeting stuff on the Quest right now. And apparently you can hook into Teams and some things like that. I've looked into it because you could do the desktop streaming, and I thought that might be kind of cool to hook into, because I could see hooking into five or six different machines like what I've got, and then having that big virtual space to work on things. And it's fun. It's a great concept. Doesn't actually work that well when you go to get any real work done. Like, I couldn't see actually sitting there coding or, you know, reading through sim logs or digging through a network in a VR headset, because your eyes are going to be bleeding after by the end of the day. But, yeah, I could totally see commercial applications for these things. And so I understand what Facebook is doing here. But I also don't disagree that they value that data tracking a lot, because you know they're selling them at a loss to the consumer. Because if they're only charging $300 for the headset. Anyways, let's see if the soundboard messes up the Digital Dojo thing this time. Unless you guys had anything else.
No, I'm good.
It's that WAV file. Something with that WAV file messes with the soundboard. I don't know why. But it worked. I've only got one thing for you tonight in Digital Dojo. And it is about game development, especially since we were just talking about the Oculus. But not for the system you're thinking. This is a quick and easy drag and drop retro game creator for Game Boy.
Nice.
Apparently it compiles to actual ROMs that will run on an emulator, or if you have a flash cart, on real hardware.
Awesome.
Just something fun to play with, something a little different. And I came across this earlier today. I'm like, that is fucking cool. And thought that would be our decking link for tonight.
Yeah, I like that.
So, visual game builder, no programming knowledge required. Design your graphics in any editor that can output ping. Top-down 2D JRPG style. Build real Game Boy ROMs. You can also export them as HTML5. Runs on Windows, Mac, Linux. It's open source.
Top-down, but it won't do side-scroller?
I'm sure it will do side-scroller. I think they're focusing on that JRPG style of engine, but I mean, if you can move sprites around a screen, you can do a side scroller, surely.
Well, I mean, I'm still cool with doing a Zelda clone, but yeah, you might do a Mega Man clone.
Yeah, right now they're right now they've got JRPG style platformers, point and click, and shoot 'em ups. That's what they're supporting in beta 2. So,
gotta combine the top down and the shoot 'em ups. I'm seeing Super Columbine Massacre 35. Hellraiser Edition.
Well, Madman, it's a free game maker, so you download that. Let us know when it's done, and that'll be our dojo link for that week. It's like, what's
actually,
this? This is Madman.
This
is Madman getting on the no-fly list. That's what this is.
Oh, damn it. They're going to revoke the passport I just finally bought.
Where are you going?
Oh, I'm planning to go down under in about a year.
Oh, fun.
Good luck. I don't think we're letting anyone in for three.
Damn it! I meant, find that. There are other places. I can go shoot polar bears.
I think you just blew out your microphone because your volume just went way down.
Yeah.
Asus RG Scripts Columbine. Damn, rats. Sponsored by Asus. because they won't pay us to stop saying their name. That's all I've got for tonight. Of course, listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Peer Decking every Thursday. The Galaxy 15 radio site, the subreddit, in the IRC tonight. Myself, Sardonic, Cyberlard, Cycros, DP View, Her Rats, Madman, and the Coffee Maker. Madman, closing thoughts.
Oh, bourbon's good. I kind of want some now.
Yeah, I need more. Sponsored by your boy Rage. Oh, fuck off.
Sponsored by your boy Rage Shadow Legends.
Oh, God.
All right, are you closing thoughts?
This closing thought sponsored by... No, I don't have any plans this weekend. I'm just going to sit here and play video games, I think.
That's a good plan. That's a very good plan. I might end up doing that this weekend, too. We'll see.
I'm getting a little addicted to World of Warships right now.
Really? That's another one you see shilling on YouTube a lot.
I prefer to play Steel Ocean, but they don't have any servers anymore. I have an autistic tendon for boat games. I like them. And it's the only game in town. So
excuse me.
I've been getting into that a little bit with SOD. So.
Oh, fun.
It's a little cartoonish, but take what you can get, right?
Hey.
And it's free. Yeah, it's a grind, and those who are paying money are always going to win, but I just play it for the boats.
Well, I forget that.
Hey, pay to win.
I got fucking robbed by a play-to-win guy last night. I just owned me, you know. My boat's all rusty and shit. Is a paint job, extra fucking stars, and yeah. You're going to get it every now and then.
Used to be, when you'd log into one of these games, you see somebody who's got all the high-end gear, the cool color schemes and all the decals on their stuff. It's like, man, that's somebody who's played this game a lot. I bet they're really good. Now,
yeah,
man,
I know.
Man, I bet that's a 13-year-old with their mom's credit card.
That's it, right?
So.
But it is what it is.
Anyways, that's all we got. I hear my voice getting worse, so I'm going to hit sound effects and close this out.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Now I'm just going to nose down and call it a night.
This is extremely dangerous to our democracy.
Shut up, Wesley.